All right, I'd like to invite our fabulous panelists to the stage. Would you all like to join me up here? I think we color coordinated pretty well without even having a conversation about it. I don't know about you. All right, again, good morning and welcome. My name is Teresa Hazera, and I'm responsible for the Institutional Retirement Services Group at TIAA CREF, and I am just absolutely delighted and honored to be here with all you amazing women and feel this incredible energy in the room. TIAA CREF is a financial services provider for about 16,000 not-for-profit organizations that are really dedicated to serving others, whether it's in education or healthcare or public service. Our employees understand that every employee in the institutions that we serve, whether it's a Nobel laureate, and we have a few of those, or groundskeepers, every single one of them deserve to retire with dignity and respect. And that's the focus of our mission. And more, we are finding through our work that the person in charge of household finances is a woman. So that's work that's been added to all of our plates. In this session today, we're going to talk about the challenges that women face when trying to balance work and home life. Now, I'm going to have a show of hands here. Do we have any working moms out there? Hands up. Ooh, just a few. Okay. How about any women caring for adult parents? Hands up. Oh, leave them up. Working moms, you got to leave your hands up for just a few minutes here. Okay. Caring for adult parents. How about working full-time and also managing your household full-time? All right. Anyone taking a lead on investments, major purchases, or monthly bill paying? All right. I think that pretty much represents the whole crowd. But I am a mother of four myself, and I do a lot of those different things too, so I can tell you that I share your experiences. And whether your experiences as a mom or taking care of adult parents, we are really all in this together. And we need to learn together, because when you think about it, career tracks for women, it's really something that's relatively new. Now, I'm really excited about this session because balancing my career and my family and my other interests is something I have been working on for most of my adult life. Sometimes, I have to say, a little more successfully than other times, but it really has been a passion and work of my adult life. In particular, I care deeply about the expectations and roles for women because of my four children, three are girls, and I feel a responsibility that I'm sure many of you also feel to be both a good role model as a mom and as a career woman. You know, the truth really is that our lives are rarely in balance. And if we do achieve equilibrium one day, boy, it seems like something happens the next day that makes us have to recalibrate. And I think one of my most painful recalibrations was on Saturday morning. I had one of my daughters on my lap. She was 3 years old at that time. We were watching cartoons, and she looked up at me with this really serious face. And she said, "Do you know where my real mom is?" Yeah, I get choked up even talking about it now. And I knew it was the crystal clear moment, right? That my life had to change, that things weren't the way they needed to be, and that as the architect of my life and the caretaker of my family, that I had to make the changes, and only I could do it. So it, for me, was one of those, and we all have them, those learning moments, those moments of truth when it's time to make a change. So for me, it helps when I think about my life, not so much from a perfect balance perspective, but about making good choices in the moment. So there are times when I work, and that's the choice I make, and times when I'm really more focused on home and family, leaning in and leaning out. I think the trick is really understanding the consequences of the choices and making the choice that's right for you and the people that you love and cherish at that point in time. And knowing that your choice may not be someone else's choice, and that is okay. I've really focused and learned, I've learned this over time, three guiding principles when I need to make a big choice. And the first one is be self-aware. Really be in tune with where you are. You need to know what you want and have the courage to say it. And that also means you need to know what compromises are you willing to make and what compromises are you not willing to make. Second, I think you have to recognize that your life is not just one story. It's a long novel. And there are many chapters and many twists and turns. And you have to really think about, what chapter are you in and what chapter comes next? Many of us are so busy getting through the day and helping and caring for all the people that are in our life, whether it's work at home, that we're not spending much time thinking about that next chapter or really planning for it. Finally, the last lesson learned is really about honesty. You need to be honest. You need to be honest with your family. You need to be honest with your peers, and you need to be honest with your mentors. These people really do want to help you, but they can't help you in the way they want if you're not clear and you're not specific about what it is that you're hoping for. I can tell you, I run a nice-sized organization at this point, and I do a lot of mentoring and work with my senior team, and the men are being very specific about what they want in their career, what they want in their life, and when they want it and how they're going to get there. So we, too, have to be that clear. You can have ambition and still be a great team player. Those two are not mutually exclusive. So the three lessons for me, I hope they may help some of you, is be self-aware, know where you are in your life, what chapter comes next, and be honest and clear. This session is a place where we can discuss our challenges honestly in a safe environment with women facing similar issues. At TI Craft, we've learned about the importance of creating safe havens like this with our Women to Women program. It's where we bring women together for really honest conversations about money. And I've been lucky enough to participate and talk to a lot of women at different stages in their life about how they're managing their money and many other things. I've seen a young, single working mom come in completely overwhelmed by financial priorities and how to get on the right path financially and leave with a really clear course to financial security. I've heard a mid-career divorced mom come into a workshop with tears in her eyes, and she literally said, "I am going to have to work until I die." And she left with newfound confidence, a plan to get her to retirement, and hugging her facilitator on the way out. That is the best feeling in the world, when women are breaking through their fears, their worries, and taking action. With the right knowledge and the right support and the right community, we can do it. Great things can happen, and they do happen. This is exactly what is going to happen here, right now. And I can't think of a better person to lead the discussion than Lisa Belkin. Lisa is the chief national correspondent for Yahoo News, where she reports on social issues. Before joining Yahoo, she was senior columnist at the Huffington Post, covering life, work, and family. She spent most of her career at the New York Times, where she was a national correspondent, medical reporter, and contributor to the New York Times Magazine. There, she created the Motherlode blog, which focused on the elusive balancing act of work and parenting. Lisa has authored several books, including Life's Work, Confessions of an Unbalanced Mom. Please join me in welcoming Lisa and the rest of the panel.
Okay, first question, is the mic on? Oh, yes,
the mic is on.
Hi, thank you so much for that, and basically solved everyone's problems. So I want to start by letting this panel introduce themselves, because they are amazing. We have vowed to give you some useful takeaway when you leave here today. That's not easy. As all of you know, this is an issue that is knotty and difficult, and you wouldn't all be here if you'd had it figured out already. But we're going to do the best we can. So I'm going to start by letting my panelists introduce themselves with, you know, a nugget or two of advice that's worked for them in figuring out life-work balance, and then I'll give you my own best attempt at wisdom. And then we're going to talk, and we're going to talk for a little while, but mostly we're then going to talk with you, because that's always the most important part on this subject. So the mic is there, and we're going to open it up, you know, a little ways into this, so please jump in. I'm going to start with Katrina Alcorn. Say hi.
Hi. I'm Katrina Alcorn. I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I'm the author of a book called Maxed Out, American Moms on the Brink, and talk about real stories by real women. Is this working? It's a real story about my experience burning out, trying to manage a very demanding job. I had this fabulous job as a creative director at this up-and-coming web design firm in San Francisco, and loved my job, and my responsibilities were growing, and my family was growing, and I totally had it all figured out, just so you know, pat on the back. I was doing great until I had my third child, and then nothing I was doing worked. And I'm going to give you a takeaway right now, because the big takeaway for me in this experience was that I thought I could just keep going. I thought that leaning in was the end of the answer. And leaning in may be part of the answer, but what I've learned is it is not the whole answer. There's a time to lean in, and there's a time to ask others to lean in. And those others may be your manager. They may be your husband or your partner, if you have one. It may be friends or family. It may be policymakers, which is a whole other discussion. But if we frame this conversation always as, here's what women should do to be successful, I don't think we're going to get where we want to be, because women are kicking butt. We are doing so much, but we need some help. We can't do it all by ourselves. So I'm that's me, and that's my takeaway.
Great.
And also to my left, Gail Sheehy.
Hello, everybody. I'm Gail Sheehy. I'm a...
Oh,
thank you.
So you know,
nice. There are some oldies here. I'm an author and a journalist. I've written 17 books, and I finally, when I entered 70, decided it was time to turn the spotlight on my own passages and see how I did. And what I came out with after 3 years of excavating my life is that what worked for me was daring. Daring to fail, daring to do things I hadn't ever done before, and if I didn't land on my feet the first time, to try it again and again, and then something new would happen, and then I'd build a new partnership or maybe a new career path. So daring to me is dreaming dangerously and acting confidently. You don't have to just fake it, and you act it. But dreaming dangerously, particularly in your 20s, you're going to probably fail. But, you know, you may go into something and you say, this is my great dream. And you get in there and you say, yuck, I don't want to do this. Look at these people. They work 90 hours a week. I don't want to do that. And that's the time to allow yourself to fail and fail often and get it out of the way. And then be on track by the time you're in your late 20s. The other thing I would say is try not to have a child on your own in your 20s, which is what 41% of women do today. I was a single mom as a result of divorce in my 20s. It's not fun, and it's very difficult. You really do need to have a partner, whatever partner it is, maybe somebody that lives with you, but who is really committed in order to balance that with a robust career life.
Lynn Tinney.
Hi, I'm Lynn Tinney. I'm with Riverbed. I am most like you. I have two boys and a career that I adore and love. If I could leave you with a few thoughts, which I think most of us all share, many of the things that you're saying resonate very heavily with me as my life rules. One is that I have a personal calculus. It's my own metrics. It's not the expectations of someone else. And I check on that. You know, every once in a while I get caught up with what I think I should be doing, and I come back to what is my own calculus and what's my own metric and measurement. And part of that metric is I rarely strive for perfection at home. I strive for happy. And those are two very different metrics, if you will. If you have a family that's happy, I find it's the foundation for me personally to be successful in all of the things that I do. When I go outside of that home, outside of that family, wherever I might be in a trip or a travel with work, other commitments, my foundation, if it's happy and solid and stable, because I've strove for happy, then I can just launch into all the other things that I love. So that's what I look to do. So it's your own personal calculus. I strive for happy. That's mine, and really that I can it unleashes me to be successful everywhere else I go.
And Camille Chang Gilmore.
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Camille Chang Gilmore, and I'm the Vice President of Human Resources for Boston Scientific, as well as the Global Chief Diversity Officer for the company. And my story, Boston Scientific out there.
The local crowd.
Yeah. My story begins in Atlanta. I've lived there in Atlanta, and I have the opportunity to work for a phenomenal company that allows me to wake up every morning on Monday at 4, travel to Minnesota or Boston, and then come back on Thursday nights to my home in Atlanta. Some may say, why would you do that? Well, here's the reason. I have two boys, 14 and 16. I've been married 21 years. And the unique thing about my boys are they were diagnosed with autism, one on the autism spectrum and the other with Asperger's. And if you know anything about Atlanta, Emory University has phenomenal research that actually gets integrated into the schools as they develop it. And so everything about my life in Atlanta is extremely strategic. We live in Gwinnett County, which is one of the best school systems in Atlanta, and my children go there so that they can get the support that they need. Boston Scientific has been phenomenal for me because they said, you know what, Camille, you basically told us a non-negotiable. I'm not moving. And I can't move because my kids need that support. And so I have traveled this way for about, of the 10 years that I've been with Boston Scientific, for the last 7. And it works. My husband has a very demanding job. He's an NFL agent. And we have some rules of engagement. One, if you don't get it on the cozy calendar, you can't do it. It's that simple. And if you didn't get it on the cozy calendar, you have to figure it out. You own figuring out what we do with the boys that week. In addition to that, one of the things that we made sure is that we're very, very organized. Everything in my house is extremely organized. To the support that my children get, you know, one of the things that we do is we have tutors. And some people may say, well, tutors are expensive. Well, one of the things we were able to do is make sure that we identify their peers to help them in the school. So as you can see, family for me is extremely important. And if I were to leave you with at least one thing, is that if your family is not happy, nothing else is going to work. It's just not going to work. So family, family first. The second is being organized and really getting clear about what your non-negotiables are.
Teresa, you sort of covered this, but what, anything to add? I think it's on.
Is it on?
Okay.
Yes. I guess the last thing I would add is if you're going to work, work at what you love and work for a company or build a company that shares your values and lets you bring your whole person to work. Because if every day you're at work at a place that is inconsistent with who you are, you can't possibly be happy and you can't possibly be doing what you need to be doing at home. So find a place where the values match.
So I want to start with a story that sort of encompasses whatever advice I might have. My first day as a work-from-home mom, see, I had upended my entire life at that point. I had been working for the New York Times. I had been going into the office every day. I got pregnant for the second time, and it just became too much. And at that time, you had to quit and freelance in order to have flexibility because, you know, Lisa, we just don't have people working from home. And so I did. I quit, and I went back to freelancing for the organization that I had worked for all those years. And I set up this wonderful office above the garage, and I had figured it all out. I was very, very proud of myself because I had solved the entire life work conundrum. And I was going to, you know, have this, I had the fax machine that at that point you still kind of had to pull the paper out, and I had the computer that still had the modem that made that ridiculous noise, and, you know, but the height of modern technology that allowed me to work remotely. And I vaguely imagined, I think, that I was going to nurse the baby with one hand and type with the other, and there'd be some organic dinner simmering out on the stove somewhere. And then, so this is how my first day as a work-from-home mother went. I got up in the morning. I had breakfast with my older son, at the time my only son. And then his babysitter came, because one rule for working from home is do not try to do it and be the chief caregiver at the same time. Mm-hmm. So our babysitter came. I, you know, kissed Evan sweetly on the top of his head and say, bye-bye, honey, mommy's going to work now. And I went into my wonderfully equipped office, closed the door, and Evan proceeded to lie down on the other side of that door and shriek for the next many, many hours. This went on every day. I put on, you know, got up, put on my sweats, because what is the point of working from home if you're not going to work in your sweats? Gave Evan his breakfast, kissed him goodbye, went into my office, and Evan screamed. And we did this for about a week because I'm a slow learner. And I finally realized that Evan was a very quick learner and had a far better sartorial sense than I had given him credit for. Because he knew that when mommy was in heels and toes and a suit, that mommy belonged to work. But when mommy was in her sweats, then mommy belonged to him. And he was really ticked off that he didn't have access to his version of mommy. So I finally woke up on day 5 or 6 or 7, and I put on the outfit and the heels and the hose and the whole bit. And I gave Evan breakfast, and I kissed him and said, bye-bye, sweetie, mommy's going to work now. And I left the house, and I went to the local diner, and I had a cup of coffee and a muffin. That's when people were still eating carbs and before there was Starbucks. And I then snuck back into my own house. And I did this for a good long time. Eventually, Evan completely lost interest in me. And over the years, you know, it was me who wanted it him when he came home from school. You know, how was your day? What'd you do? Please tell me anything, one little snippet of something. And he was uninterested. But for a while, I hid from him because that was the only way I could get work done. In other words, I hadn't figured it all out. My takeaways from that, the immediate one was you need to be flexible and be willing to change your game plan, because what you think is going to work then sometimes meets up with the reality of your children and your life and, you know, facts. And you need to be able to change. And the second thing, which I didn't learn until much later in the game, and you touched on it when you said that, you know, it's a chapter, was eventually my child changed. Eventually the needs changed. I am now the mother of two grown sons, and Gail, I know, is going to talk about a lot of this later, that what we focus on with all our energy and our entire soul is those 18 years, because they are overwhelming, and we think they are everything. And in a lifespan of, one hopes, 70, 80 more years, they're really just one chapter. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if in that chapter you make choices that are a little lesser, a little different than the ones that you want to make on either side of that chapter. So those would be, oh, and then the last one, which you all also touched on, is, you know, give up on perfection. My mother's version of this was 40-watt light bulbs. If you put in 40-watt light bulbs, you don't see the dust as well. So, you know, and your own version of what you can live with and live without. So I want to ask all of you, you know, you're all telling where you are now and what works now. But my question is it where you expected to be? What did you have to change about your life work expectations in order to get where you are? Anyone want to start with that?
I completely changed my life. I mean, I you know, wrote this book about what didn't work, and I'm on the other side of that now, and I'm self-employed. And what's really interesting to me is that I do exactly the same work that I did 7 years ago when I was maxed out, but now I have autonomy. And I think that's really important. I don't think you have to be self-employed to get that. I think there are ways to get that at work. But what it looks like for me day to day is I may work a lot of hours, I may work very few hours. We built an office in our backyard, so I have no commute unless I'm meeting with a client. And sometimes that means I need to fly somewhere. Maybe I go to Texas every once in a while. I'm currently working with someone who's in Texas. But the difference for me now is that if my kids are sick, I can stay home with them and no one's giving me the stink eye and I don't feel guilty. I mean, that's a huge, huge thing, just that one example. Or if, you know, my daughter got a concussion last week, I can get her and I can still work. I got her to the doctor, and I believe it or not, I did have a deadline to finish, and I did finish it. But it's not like it's easy, but I think having control, having more control of your time and how your work gets done is very important, and there are ways to advocate for that.
I'll answer that as well. You know, I think I am where I thought I would be, to be frank with you. I grew up and raised to be very determined, and I had some goals out there, and I'm, you know, they're not all completed, but I'm knocking a few of them down that I'm very proud of. I have never had, like, the big moment. I think I have had a career that I've kind of tripped my way along, if you will, on, you know, figuring out what was right for me. And I also have been very, very fortunate to work for phenomenal employers, so I can't say that I ever got a stink eye or an expectation. There were traditional ways to work and whatnot, and that certainly has changed. I've worked at home for probably the last 10 years, or home-based if I'm not traveling. But I would tell you, I had to come to terms with it myself. I felt like I was my own worst judge. And there was a day I remember sitting with my sister, who I'm close with, and I said, we just work hard. And there was this admission of, we like to work. And, you know, that's a part of who we are. We're tenacious. We both think we're pretty good at what we do. And the admission of that to ourselves took a lift off of our shoulders. It was like, okay, that's just a part of the equation. The part of the equation for me was, I like to work. I like to throw in the hours. I love it. To your point, I love to do a lot of what I do. And if I get the opportunity to throw a couple of hours in or wake up early to do something, I don't think of that as a bad thing. So that was a piece for me. It wasn't so much the expectations of others. It was more of, I was trying to fit into this equation that was really in my own head. And the minute I let that go, my life got easier. And I think autonomy is not a far word. It was almost like I accepted my own autonomy.
In hearing your story, so most of the answers on panels like these are always, well, I ratcheted back on work for a while, or I worked from home so I could be near my kids. And what strikes me about your story is it's exactly the opposite of all of that.
It is.
And so the question that comes up for me is, the next thing people always talk about after how they slowed down and ratcheted back is guilt. So how do you do the hard charging work that you do and the traveling that you do and not feel guilty about it?
So I had a wonderful role model, my mother. So many from Boston Scientific know I'm Jamaican. So Jamaicans work hard, work 5-10 jobs usually. And one of the things that I will tell you is that she was the example to me. She was a nurse, and she worked hard. And part of that story is at 18, my father passed away, and my mother worked 3 jobs to put me through Penn State. 3 jobs. And people say, how can you work 3 jobs? Is that even possible? Well, as a nurse, she worked 7 to 3, Monday through Friday, 3 to 11 at another job, Monday through Friday, and then Saturday another hospital. And she made sure that we had everything that we needed. And actually, we learn to be self-sufficient. And I will tell you, my kids know that if I'm home, I'm probably no good to them as much as I am when I am present. And because one of the things I do is when I do come home on Thursdays, I will tell you, Friday, it's about reassimilation back to the family and making sure that they know that on Saturday and Sunday, I am all in. I am all in for them. And they know it. So my team knows that even on Thursdays, like during football season, so my kids play football. And many people, you know, when they hear that my kids have autism, they're like, well, how do they play football? Because, you know, the noise and all that. Well, one of the things that we have done is just gone after just creative therapies, and it's just working to the point where they are self-sufficient. And being there and knowing that I'm flying in on Thursday afternoon to be there for their football game Thursday night, and I'm not going to lose, and they know I'm going to be there. For them, it's like the biggest thing. And so I don't have guilt because I know that I've made that non-negotiable very clear to a lot of people. Come Friday night or Thursday night, if I can get in to see my son's football game, I'm going to be there. On Saturday and Sunday, I'm all in for them. We go work out. We have a routine. So Saturday morning, we get up. We go to the hyperbaric chamber. For those of you who know alternative therapies with autism, we go to hyperbaric chamber. They're in there for an hour. We then go work out. We then go to Chipotle. very routine here. We go to Chipotle. We get our burrito. We go home. We sit down and watch college football. And that is kind of the thing that we do and created that kind of consistency for them. I think when you have kids, if you show them some consistency, and that's what my mother did for me, even though she wasn't there, you know, 24 hours a day, and there's no way we can be. And I think we just have to recognize. But when we are there, what are they getting from us? I will tell you, every morning when I wake up, I send my kids a text, and it has something positive. Because I don't know if you know this, but our kids get 90% negative energy information all day long. And we probably do too. And so I make sure that I text them something of inspiration to say, hey, not only do I believe in you, I want you to be and have a fantastic day. And I think that's helped me to really recognize that I don't have guilt. Because you know what? My kids, you know, when you know you're making an impact is when your kids quote something back to you and say, Mom, you sent this to me, and guess what? I kept it because it helped me through my day. So I try, you know, not to beat myself up, because I'm giving everything I can, not only to my kids, but to my husband and to my job. And as long as I know I'm staying true to that, I'm good.
So Gail, talk to me about the bigger picture, because you have watched women do this now for a few years. Is this the story of the modern woman? Is this what makes us different from our mothers and our grandmothers? Is this need to figure this out? And it feels like an individual choice, and yet now two or three generations, depending on how you define them, has been dealing with this.
Working with this, absolutely. Well, I think we've really been sold a bill of goods that we have to go for having it all. And I think that's such a false promise, particularly for younger women. You can have it all, but probably it's later, and you're not going to have it all at once. And it changes decade to decade. Mm-hmm. And you've heard that from everybody here. So I think I always do things by the stage of life. So I talk about the trying 20s. What do you have? It's not about having it all, it's about having what matters. So what matters in the trying 20s? Well, one thing that matters is developing the capacity for intimacy. That's the stage of life when we have to do it. Otherwise, you really get distance from it. And, you know, you don't learn about intimacy from sexting or from, you know, swiping. It actually requires face-to-face relationships, sometimes body-to-body, you know, messy human relationships. And then, as I said before, it's about daring, taking a lot of chances, because you can't really hurt anybody else when you're in your 20s before you have a family. That's the time when you can mess around and fail and move from job to job to find out what you really want to do. And then in the turbulent 30s, what matters is deciding if and when and how many children you want to have. Because as you've heard, having the third child really, really changes the calculus.
That's why we got a dog. Not a perfect idea.
Right. I only had one, and then I had another one when I was 45, and I adopted one when I could actually fit it into my life.
Yeah.
So, and I have to say that too many successful career women who've been following the lean-in thing tell me now today about mid-30s, hey, I forgot to get married. I forgot to have a child. And then, because they're so super efficient and everything else, they figure they'll get this family thing off the ground in a year. In a year? Wait a minute. Just finding the right person might take you 3 years. You're lucky if you make the 42, 43-year-old cutoff and have a child or two children. And a lot of women who are older now tell me they wish they had worked out the, you know, finding the right mate earlier in life. And it also, in the flourishing 40s, I think what matters is to let go of the illusion that success and economic success leads to fulfillment. It leads to partial fulfillment. But then there's, you know, initiating the search for meaning, which is what people in their 40s always talk about. Is what I'm doing really, does it have meaning for me? And also finding some spiritual fulfillment. We forget about that. But, you know, as you get older, you begin to think about your mortality and think about things on a larger plane. In the flaming 50s, what matters for women is to move from pleasing to mastery. You know, you can please the people that you choose, and you can tell the rest of them to just go, you know what. In the selective 60s, because time is getting shorter, you have to be selective. What matters is to find a new balance between making it and giving it back, because we all want to feel like we're giving it back, and we have more skills and more networks and maybe some more financial capacity to give it back. And finally, in the sage 70s, what matters is health, both physical and mental. And that means, you know, really thinking about and distilling the wisdom that you have to share. And one of the ways to do that is to write a memoir. It really does help.
So everyone go off. That's the takeaway. Go off and write your memoir. Thank you for that. And I look forward to reading the book that all of that is in. We talked about I a lot. I mean, I do this and I do that has come up on this panel a lot. And then there are hints that it's not just I. There's a partner for, I think, everyone here, and there's other people that we depend on. Talk to me a little about that. How does one negotiate that? How does one allow yourself to rely on other people, which many women aren't good at?
Yeah, I have a posse. I got a posse. Posse of people in Atlanta, and first and foremost, my husband. He is phenomenal. He has just taken a step. He's just stepped up in every way to make sure that he is present not only for the boys, but for me as well.
And have you gotten past the part where it's your responsibility and he's good at sharing it? Or have you somehow managed to get to the place where this is together?
We're a team. So football runs through my entire family. So we have that whole football theme kind of running in our household. So everything works as a team. And everyone needs to step up, you know, no matter what position you're going to play, everyone has to step up in my household and play a role. So it starts with him. And, you know, one of the things I had to learn is I had to be comfortable with asking for help. It's amazing to me as women how sometimes we are so uncomfortable about asking for help. And there is a community that's willing to help you. And what I've done is identified those trusted friends that I can leverage, and I can say, hey, you know, I'm in Boston right now. My son is sick. Derek is, not available. Can you go pick him up? And they'll say, yeah, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my husband will be there, and, you know, by the time, you know, you pick him up, but can you just go get him for me? Because we don't want him waiting there. And knowing that you have that community that's there that you can leverage is huge. And I would say if there's one thing you have to recognize is know when to ask for help and be okay with that. It's not a weakness. It's actually a strength, because what's the alternative? The poor kid sits there until I come back from Boston, you know? It's not going to happen, and we can't have that. So it is a team, a true team.
We do it the same way in our, you know, it's a community. That take a village thought is so true. It does start, you know, it starts with your, you know, your core family. My children, you know, they're teenagers. They do their own laundry now. You know, it's not just about Jim and I any longer, because we're trying to transfer some responsibilities, you know, out. But you have to look for those circles of community, whether it's family, a neighbor, and to do things, you know, the things like pick a child up, or, you know, sometimes it's, you know, I just need a dose of someone telling me I'm doing a good job. I just need the friend call, you know, or I need the purge of frustration. I'm calling you tomorrow and I'm going to do a purge, okay? I need 10 minutes to just rant a little bit so I can get back to balanced. And those are, you asking for that and finding opportunities for yourself to do that, I think is what keeps you, you know, really on the beam, on the balance beam, to, you know, do the backflips that you have to do. So you got to ask for it. It's, you know, you have to create your own circles. You have to. Yeah.
Teresa, you look like you want in.
Yeah, I would add two things. I also have this incredible husband, and one of the things he does, but it doesn't have to be your husband, is he's good about holding up the mirror and helping me see myself in all my good and bad. And I'll never forget one day he said to me, I don't know what happened to you, but when did you wake up and think that you were Susie Homemaker? When did you wake up and think you could do it all?
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you got to fix that in your head.
Yeah.
And it was the most fabulous freeing moment. And then I realized another thing that has really helped me is I've always wanted to participate in the kids' school events, but they schools still haven't seemed to figure out that some of us work during the day.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the big things are during the day. So I made very explicit agreements with some of my friends who are the best volunteers in the world. And I said, here's the deal. I will be your volunteer. So I can't come to school at 3 in the afternoon or at 10 and spend 2 hours. But what I can do is give you time at night, time on weekends. I'll drive your kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm refreshed. Mm-hmm. On Saturday and Sunday, and those little voices make me happy,
yeah.
Right? When she needs a break.
Yeah, right.
And so, but making those explicit agreements, I think, is really powerful. So yeah. Those are two things that help me.
But Katrina, we're bad at this, aren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, as a society, we all tend to feel this was my choice to have this life, and so it is my problem. And, I mean, this is the exception.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm curious, how many people here are single parents? Just, I'm very aware that we're talking about our great husbands, and mm-hmm. I have one too. So, yeah, it's really challenging. Since my book came out, I have to say I've gotten letters and emails and blog comments from thousands of women around the country who are all dealing with this stuff.
If you have not read Katrina's book, by the way, do. It is eye-opening. It's spectacular.
Thank you. But I think what's important about this is realizing that we get really myopic sometimes, and we think, oh, I just need to try harder. I just need to let go of the guilt. It's all in my head. And so I think it's important to remember it's not just in your head, it's in all our heads. Yeah. Trust me, I've heard from too many people to think this is just a random thing. But I do agree with everything everyone said, that we have to find those circles of people we can depend on. I mean, in my situation, I have a fabulous husband who does so much, but he also works a ton. And there's only so much that he can do when he's working a lot. And we have no family around, up until, actually, my aunt moved out recently a month ago. And it was like we won the lottery. But so what do? I've managed to kind of build these really strong bonds with my girlfriends, and they end up being the parents, the dads too, but it's especially the moms, of kids who are friends with my kids. And we've finally gotten to a point in the last couple years where I feel like I can just call them and ask them to do anything.
Yes.
You know, I need to drop off my kid at 7 a.m. tomorrow. Is that okay? Like, will you guys, can you handle that? And the answer is usually yes. But it took a lot to get to that point, because we don't want to feel like we're imposing.
And didn't you find, I found this interesting, I found the first time I asked, for that favor, they were almost thankful, like, oh my God, now I get to call you when I need you.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Right.
It was this instant of. So it's just the start. You just need to crack it and start it. So
I want to open this for questions. So if you have any, why don't you start coming up? While you're gone.
I just wanted to say, this is such a great rehearsal. That you all are doing, developing a circle of care around parenting your children. Yes. Because when you're really going to need it is when your parents start falling apart. Yeah. In my case, it was my husband. And husbands fall apart. And I was only in my mid-50s, and my husband got cancer for the first time. I became his caregiver for the next 17 years. We had some wonderful respites in between. But I tried to do it all for the first few years, and when I got to the third year, like almost everybody else who does it that long, I had to call a hotline and say, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. It's just, it eats up your life. My career went away, my health went away, everything. And then I began to learn how to develop a circle of care, doing just the kind of thing that you are doing. And actually, what you can do is just break it down, like little half-hour segments. Mm-hmm. And there are like maybe 50 half-hour segments during a week. And your friends just have to take that half hour to make those phone calls or pick up that prescription. And as you say, they're welcome. They welcome it because they know you'll do it for them.
Okay, floor is open.
Hi. I think all you women are amazing. I don't think I could do what you do. I am married, but we don't have any children. And I wondered if you have any suggestions for people who don't have that family responsibility, because it tends to be that work can kind of go on forever when you don't have that thing, the appointment, the football game that you have to be to. Yeah. You're just the person who doesn't have kids, and sure, you can finish that work because you somehow don't have a life, even though we all do. Yeah. So I was wondering if you have any suggestions for those of us who don't have kids.
So my husband and I, we waited 5 years before we had kids. And one of the things that we did is we really recognized that early on we needed to make time for each other, because what started to happen is our jobs started to consume our lives. And we were working on the weekends, we were working at night, and it just wasn't sustainable. And so one of the things that we did, and everyone has talked about this, but it's then putting it into practice, having your date nights. Those are real. I'm here to tell you, they work. And actually, we continue that now. So it's something that we started before we had kids, and we continued it after. And we were really glad we did, because then when the kids came along, they consume your life. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that you don't even have time for one another. So now our Friday night dates have turned into Sunday football dates, where we watch, because of his job, we watch football from 1 to 9 at night. And actually what I do is I sit right next to him. He has 3 TVs going, and he's doing analysis on his guys.
To me, this sounds like another level of hell.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's for you.
But it's awesome. I'm telling you. I love it. So I love it. And we talk about how funny it is that, he's sitting there, I'm sitting there, and we feel really connected. And then I'll give him some tips and even some advice on some of his players. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, we do the same. We had children quickly after we got married. So we didn't have those years, and we kind of wanted to, but kind of screwed up. But we actually, he's a big golfer, and he taught me to play golf, so we could break away for 5 or 6 hours. We didn't do date night, but that was our thing. Yeah. And you have to reinvest in each other, because, you know, you're living these parallel lives, and it is so easy to drift.
Yeah.
It is, exactly. It can drift in an instant. You're consumed with work, you know, you're giving it your all. So whatever your reinvestment, you know, do that reinvestment thing. Date night, hobby, a sport.
And I find myself, I find myself saying on panel at some point, on every panel like this, it has an off button, people. Mm-hmm. You know, we have all these devices. They mean we can work anywhere. They make us feel flexible. And we have to remember it has an off button. And you need to use it. And you need to decide, you know, is dinner sacrosanct? Is after 9 o'clock at night sacrosanct? But you will work all the time because you can if you don't decide this is the time I am not working.
Mm-hmm. Hi. I feel short. I am living right where all of you have been, and I have 3 children, 7 through 11, and have made a lot of choices. I've learned a lot of what you've said, but I'm also now transitioning into the elder care situation where my father is early stage Alzheimer's, and my mom's trying to do it all. She's trying to help me, which I need, mm-hmm. but she's also has to care for him, and I'm trying to give her breaks so that she can, and I'm very nervous about this stage because it's, I almost feel like I wouldn't say I have it all figured out. I don't, but I can work around things. I have good, you know, structure, but this new thing is really scaring me. Do you have advice? Because I feel like I'm going to be juggling on both sides, you know?
Well, as I say, you have to develop a circle of care. And one of the ways to do that is, you know, get friends of your mom's who are veteran caregivers. They've already done it. They are the best sources of all, and if your father is he chronically ill?
No, it's just sort of the beginning.
Alzheimer's.
So he thinks that he should be able to drive anywhere, and we have to kind of
in that negotiation for the care car keys.
Yes,
that
so
is the hardest of all.
Yeah.
One of the best ways to do it is he probably won't want anybody outside coming in to help him.
Right.
Yeah. Men are really, you know, I don't need that. I don't need. You say, Dad, I think you need a personal assistant. Oh, you know, that's like he used to be. He had a secretary, you know, do this, you know, tweet that, so on. That's one way to bring somebody in who can relieve your mom and also give him another relationship. Because as long as he's well enough to, have a new relationship, it's great to give him a few new ones because it keeps him very alive.
Yes.
Also, there's now a lot of art and music that is being offered to people who have Alzheimer's. It takes them to museums, takes them to concerts. And if they do paint at all by themselves, there's a whole documentary called I Remember Better When I Paint, because those parts of the brain are the last to be affected by Alzheimer's. And so people can really come alive and bring back some of the emotion and some of the awareness that they may be losing.
Thank
Get
you.
Support for yourself. Alzheimer's struck our family as well.
Yeah.
I remember when I became a mother, and I, you know, got hit with the flu, and my grandmother called me and said, "You're a mom, and you have to take care of yourself first."
Mm-hmm.
And it resonated with me, and you know, it was several years ago. But that, take care of yourself first. You know, you're going to be looking for your father, your mother, your family, mm-hmm. But you're a part of that equation. In order for you to do that, you got to take some time out and find out what you need to be strong for what the rest is right now.
Great advice. Thank you.
Good luck.
She's saying in Massachusetts there's an Alzheimer's line.
Hotline. Alzheimer's Association.
Hi. I'm a young wife, and my mother-in-law was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's. I have a very busy job, and my husband's ready to have kids, and I know it's time to have kids, but I'm really scared because I have too many balls in the air. Any advice?
I was about to turn 30, and I went for my yearly OBGYN checkup, and the OBGYN came in, and usually it was just, you know, everything's fine, bye. And suddenly it was a completely different appointment. And she sat me down and said, "So what are your thoughts on having children?" And
I said, well, you know, I'm 75% there. And she looked at me and says, when it comes to having kids, 75% means go for it. And, you know, it's a glib way of saying there is never the perfect time to mm-hmm. completely overhaul your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm saying this because I'm hearing from you that it's something you eventually want to do. If I was hearing from you that it's not something that you think is important for your life, then my advice is everyone doesn't have to have children. Right. You know, that is a perfectly fine life choice that society somehow has made into an anathema. But if I'm hearing from you that, you know, you're waiting for the right time, there is no right time, but, you know, there are some times that are utterly impossible. That's not what you're describing.
Yeah.
You know, when I was pregnant and terrified, a friend of mine took me onto the roof of the New York Times at lunch and sort of pointed to Times Square and said, see all those people, Lisa? Most of them have a sibling. In other words, you know, parents did it again. So it must not have been that awful.
You'll never regret it.
So if it's 75%, go for it. That's all I got.
Can I add one thing? I just want to add one thing to that. This goes for any young women in the audience who are just starting out the whole having a family thing. Make sure that when you do have that child, that your husband, if you're married, stays home with the baby, takes some parental leave, even if you can't pay for it, even if you have to beg, borrow, and steal to cover that time, get him home with that baby with you not there. And the reason is that that is a fundamental time when you're establishing new patterns as a family. And if you want to have a really equal partner in raising that kid, and trust me, you do, because it's going to be hard, that's going to kind of set the tone for the rest of your relationship. Studies show that it completely changes how fathers interact with their kids.
Okay, our timer is showing we have 5 minutes, so I want to get other people, if we can't do complete justice, I want to at least give you the floor.
Hi, so I'm 30 years old. I have a 3-year-old. I've been married 5 years. I graduated from law school last year. I just got licensed as an attorney, and I finally got the job that I've been working my behind off for years. I am exhausted, extremely overworked, and I'm constantly looking for ways to relax. But my definition of relax has grossly changed over the years. Now with a 3-year-old and with friends that are in their early 30s and still having this life that I envy and only look at on Facebook while I'm on the train.
Oh, don't believe Facebook. No.
So I guess I'm just wondering, literally, like, what do you do to relax? I'm curious.
Anyone?
Exercise.
Exercise.
That's
exercise.
My number one thing. It changes your brain. It really helps you deal with stress. Right. And even if you don't have time to go to the gym, go up and down the stairs, do a walking meeting with a colleague instead of sitting at a table. Yeah. You've got to get that exercise. It's going to help.
Or walking meditation. I have to tell you, this advice comes from the head of psychiatry at Stanford. Just as effective, actually more effective, in changing the hormonal, in hormones in your brain, 1 hour sitting with a girlfriend and talking gives you more of the right kind of hormonal change than actually 1 hour at the gym.
I like that.
Good luck.
Hi, you guys are fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us all. I'm a working mom of three and also a working mom coach, and I believe that when you become a mom, not only are you blessed with a motherhood intuition, you're blessed with something that I like to call mommy energy. And what I'd like to hear from you all is not how you manage your time, but for all the working moms taking care of someone or something, how do you not necessarily manage your time, but how do you manage your mommy energy?
That's a great question. Yeah. I guess, usually when I come back on Thursday nights, I make sure that I leave everything at the car or in the garage, and I don't bring anything in but Camille and Mom. And that's really important for my family. And so, I guess what I do is I get myself a little psyched up before. I never thought of it until you just said it. But I guess, you know, I really compartmentalize the fact that once I get in that house, mm-hmm. I am Camille mm-hmm. and I am mom. So I need to show up as that, because my husband will remind me, you know, you're not the vice president of Gilmore House. You are Camille Gilmore once you come in here. So I guess I just compartmentalize. I do.
One of the things I do as a mom, and this is from the day they were born. First of all, I did not walk into the mommy mist. My husband did. He was like, that baby came out, and he was the first one to change it. He would have breastfed if he could have. I mean, he was all in. I was like, oh, my God, I'm a mom.
If you could arrange that, that's a good tip.
Yeah, really. If I could have figured that. But I did fall in love with being a mom instantly. I was daunted by all of it, what it meant to me. But one of the things that I committed to, and it was the thing that was the foundation for Happy at Team Tinny, because we were Team 2, I wake my boys up happy, and I put them to bed happy.
That's right.
I walk in their bedroom, and, you know, they're teenage boys, and they don't like me walking in there all the time, but I give them a kiss. I start the day with a good thought. Yeah. I tell them how proud I am of them. Yeah. When they go up to the bed, if sometimes I don't actually kiss them good bed in their bed, but it's their transitioning up. You know, it's a hug and a kiss. It's a positive thought, not unlike your text and tweet. But it is morning happy, bed happy. And that is a part of my mommy energy.
I have to go tweet that.
Yeah.
Okay, so
thank you.
Let's see if we can fit everyone in. Because I'm getting signals here. Okay, how about one more question? Okay.
Hi, thank you. I'm a working mother of two, and my husband also works. He works from home, but he also travels a lot. And with the blessing of, you know, women being able to work at home and work and have a full-time job away from home, I also travel sometimes. There's also the need to deal with not necessarily being the center of the house in terms of defining, you know, how the kids will be educated and things like that. I feel like it's a constant struggle. Things are not exactly the way I would like to be them in terms of, you know, hours of TV that they can watch and the food that they eat. I don't have control of everything, and that's really frustrating to me at times. And how do you balance the fact that you're out of the house a lot, but you want something good for your kids?
Pick your battles.
Yeah.
Pick your battles. You've got to pick your battles. You know, my boys don't brush their hair every morning. Now they do because they got girlfriends. But I mean, I just pick my battles. It's just, you know, whether it's, you know, are they eating, right? I got a tall, skinny one. Yeah. I'd like them to have breakfast, let alone, you know, skip breakfast. So a piece of advice on that one is,
also, let them play on their own some of the time. This is the big problem with helicopter parents. The way kids grow up to be daring and take risks is if you let them learn how to deal with scissors and knives early, like starting when they're three. They learn how to play near fire and water and basically go into the woods for a few hours and you don't know what they're doing.
I promised that I was going to end this on time, and so I'm afraid I'm going to have to because I'm sort of breaking that promise. But come on,
on. Okay, sorry, I know you guys are running out of time. So I'm a mom of a three-year-old, and I work full-time, and my best friend and I started a passion project featuring real working moms, what works, what doesn't, in terms of work-life balance for career, family, and me time, trying to balance those big three. And one of our goals is to build technology around utilizing different resources and helping to organize the family life. And I noticed that you mentioned the cozy calendar, but was there any other technology out there that you guys are using on the daily to help balance the home portion of your lifestyle or your personal lifestyle? I know we're all very technology, advanced in work and career, but when it comes to the other aspects of our life, I don't know. There's a gap for me, so I didn't know if you guys experienced the same.
We have a simple calendar on the fridge. We also have one, but you know, it has to be visible to these kids.
Yeah.
It has to be visible to us. I mean, to a certain degree, you know, no surprise, the fridge is the center of anything in our house. But it is right there. Everybody knows when I'm on a trip, when Jim's on a trip, right, where the practices are, when the games are, what's coming up this weekend. Because it is, you're all in. It's not, you're coordinating four different wants and needs.
And our calendar's
okay,
on the
I have got to end this here because there are books waiting downstairs to be signed, and there are... people telling me that I'm breaking the rules. So thank you, everybody, and thank you to this panel.
Thank you. And if I could add, we have two folks who are going to be downstairs signing books. It's Katrina. And I believe Gail is signing as well. So you can continue the conversation with them down there. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a great rest of the day.